Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. Landfills receive millions of tons of wood waste every single year. Most of that waste can be recycled and repurposed. However, there's just a lack of infrastructure in this sector, which means that the useful material doesn't always reach the right people. And today we're diving into the future of sustainable wood sourcing with a true innovator in this space, Ben Christensen, CEO and co-founder of Cambium Carbon, who is recognized by Forbes 30 Under 30 for his team's social impact. Ben holds a Master's of Environmental Management from the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies. Growing up in a wood shop with a father who was a carpenter, it wasn't until he was in grad school that he realized the massive problem of urban wood waste. He knew there was an opportunity to create change, leading him to start Cambium Carbon. Cambium Carbon makes it easy for large companies to source materials locally and use waste-to-value materials, with a primary focus on wood. He established the company to combat climate change and revitalize communities, and in this episode, we're going to dive into Ben's journey, how turning waste into opportunity has its challenges, but it can be incredibly rewarding. We talk about ensuring their wood is at price parity with the market of the Home Depots of the world, how they want to be net negative company, and what does that mean. We also talk about how they have built their original sales demand and how they use that demand to sort out their supply. Ben's commitment to tackling the issue of urban wood waste is incredible, and we hope you enjoy the conversation.
I'm a huge believer that it's all about matching the right type of investment into the right type of deployment. And so we focused on having a really blended strategy. So we are very focused on cash flow and generating money sort of operational expenses from our own sales. We focus also a lot on unlocking public finance, so partnering both on the grant side and then on the public investment side to create some more of this regional infrastructure and unlock and create the enabling conditions to actually source this material at scale. And then we've also raised about $10 million in venture capital, which allows us to build the core technology that connects all of these dots and has helped us get to scale much, much quicker.
Welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. We have lots to discuss. I'm very excited. We're going to talk a lot about wood and forestry and all the different solutions that are out there. Thank you for joining.
Yeah, really excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.
So before we get into business and what you've built and what you're building, I wanted to just ask, did you know or was there like a real connection earlier in your career, both either in schooling or in career, that you're like, yeah, I really want to build a business that addresses some of our environmental concerns?
Yeah, there definitely was. The sort of story for me is I grew up in a town of about 200 folks, really up in the mountains in New Mexico. Spent a ton of time in the trees. And in the early 2000s, there was a bark beetle epidemic that came through and killed a lot of trees in the forest right outside my house. And so I, from a really young age, had a mom who was a scientist, and she helped me understand that that was directly connected to climate change. So basically, since I was as young as I can remember, I've known that it's my life's work to address climate change in as big a way as possible. And that's what I'm focused on. So I've been working in that space for a long time. My dad was a construction worker and a carpenter. Lots and lots of my family is in wood. So grew up in that space. As a kid, I thought of those as separate things. I would cut firewood every summer to make sure we could heat the house. I worked a number of forestry jobs. But then I was more interested in some other types of climate solutions initially. But as I got into college, got into grad school, really just continued to build on that passion for the outdoors and for trees, and learned about how important they are, and then recognized there's these big opportunities to create successful, scalable businesses that also are really in the space of forestry and can create outsized climate impacts as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up also in a small town, but in northern BC here on the west coast of Canada, and we also had something called a pine beetle. And I think what was happening was that before, our winters would be very, very cold, and it would kill the pine beetle or stop it from infesting the trees. But as our winters got more milder, they had to have a certain prolonged period of time. And I remember just our pine trees being absolutely devastated. And it was a big, big impact. And we felt it. You'd fly over and you see all these dead pine trees. I was always thinking about, what do you do with all of this? And what happens with all of these? And so what was the spark that made you think, why should I start a business? And what is this first initial idea?
One of the biggest things, as you're talking about, is, you know, we see trees all the time. If you're in a city, you're walking around them. If you're in a more rural space, you know, you see them all the time. And I think we often forget that they're living things. And so I obviously knew that, but I never really thought about the end of life of trees. And I was in this space where I've always, you know, been very focused on building teams and starting companies, and had started my first business when I was 7 and did a bunch of sort of smaller scale efforts, you know, working at creating a company, and came across this realization around how much of the material is wasted at the end of the life of a tree. And that spark moment that I think you're getting to was, I'd started to understand the problem. I'd read this study by the Forest Service that was saying in the US, we waste 46 million tons of wood every year. It's this crazy big number. And I was walking into a grocery store in Albuquerque, and I had just left this wood disposal yard where there was all of this wood waste that was getting rid of. It was like a mile away. I was going into the grocery store, and out front, they had a bunch of bundles of firewood. And I thought, oh, I wonder where this firewood comes from, because I'm just coming from a lot down the street where they're just mulching this material, they're disposing of it. And the firewood in Albuquerque, New Mexico was shipped in from Estonia. And it was this moment where I was like, what are we doing, right? Like, this is traveling thousands and thousands of miles across an ocean to get to a grocery store in New Mexico when we have wasted material just down the street. Like, this is a broken system. And so then I started really looking at it and recognized, wow, big opportunity from a business perspective and a really big opportunity from an impact perspective.
But these forestry companies, and I'm fairly familiar just from BC, we have forestry that veins throughout the entire province. And I grew up with a pulp and paper mill near me as well. And so why do we have 46 million tons of waste? Because you think that the large companies would have that kind of waste stream sorted out. Like, where does that exist from? Or is that just from smaller scale operations? Or is it across the entire industry?
It's a great question. And that waste really comes from the unmanaged forest. So if you think about the big forest product companies, they are actively owning land or have contracts where they are working to take trees out of forests to then feed into timber and pulp and paper supply chains. We're talking about all of the other types of places where we have trees. So if you think about cities, you know, there's street trees, there's trees that are in parks. In our suburban areas, there's these little patches of woodland that are not managed by a big forestry company. It's too small. It's like in a place that is not massive, wouldn't fit into their type of mills or their processing. And so there's this, all of this sort of like forgotten, unmanaged space. And that's really where this waste is coming from that we're focused on. It's not really coming off of an existing sawmill. A lot of that has clear offtake. What we're really focused on is the wood that never even gets to a sawmill, because right now it's just treated as a waste stream.
Yeah, but I guess by addressing that, it would put obviously less pressure on cutting down the forests as well. And we battle this a lot in BC, I'm sure everywhere else, is this idea of cutting down, especially our old growth forest, and then replanting it with trees that grow, of course, but with the idea that it's going to be cut down. So you're talking about this waste stream that exists, but nobody has really kind of formalized it. It's probably formalized like little bits of pieces here and there. So what was your next step?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, as you're saying, it's being done in some ways. There's some of the folks who've been working on this in really a regional or a local context, which is amazing. And we've benefited from that in huge ways as a company. And once we realized that those folks existed, we started to think about, what are the bottlenecks in the system? Initially, we thought it was the cities. We thought that the problem was people who are managing these trees, can they find better local offtake instead of disposing of that wood? Could they take it to a sawmill who will deal with that log and turn it into a board instead? What we realized is that those folks exist. There's a lot of these local suppliers, a lot of folks who will take in salvage material, but they really don't operate at scale. they're far, far, far below the orders of magnitude that you would need to take in all of that waste. And so we started really thinking about that as the step in the system of what are the sawmills, what are the local drying and fabrication shops, what are they missing? And what they were really missing was technology that helped them run their businesses more effectively, connect their own wood into the market, be more efficient, and offtake. You know, they need somewhere to buy that material. And so that's one of the biggest things that we've really focused on and was our core next step was building out the brand. So our brand is Carbon Smart Wood, which means it's material that was salvaged, it was processed locally, and it reinvests in local climate solutions, and it was fully tracked. So there's transparency in that value chain. And we have created that brand and work on the demand side to bring in these bigger customers, folks like Patagonia, Microsoft, Room and Board, people who are buying lots of material, and then we help them source locally. So we sort of connect the dots and make that viable for the local producers to start taking in more and more of that waste.
Early on in the podcast, we had Felix Bock, who's the founder of Chop Value, and he was a materials engineer and focused on bamboo. And then he'd collect chopsticks in cities and repurpose that into a structured material that then sell to Starbucks for their tabletops and others and create that kind of wood. So essentially, you're doing this on obviously a bigger scale when it comes to actually creating your own kind of lumber brand, which probably doesn't really exist very often, that people would be after a certain wood brand. Is that common or is that kind of a bit of a differentiator right off the gate?
I'll put that question back to you, Marco. Can you name a brand of wood?
Yeah, no, that's why I was asking, because I was like, when you go to Home Depot or you go to a lumber yard, no, you'd never really ever see a brand of wood.
Correct. We're trying to bring that to the market. You know, we think it's something that is really overlooked in the space. And you look in every industry, there's brands, but in wood, it's mostly just species. You know, it's here's the information about the type of board and, you know, what I'm actually bringing in. But you don't have any brand loyalty. It doesn't tell a bigger story. There's no consistency. And so we think that's one of the biggest gaps in the market that we're trying to fill.
So to start this, though, you obviously have a bit of the chicken and egg. So you need to figure out how to build out the demand on the market side, the customers, the Patagonias, the Microsofts, the individual customers, the architects to recommend this product. And then you also have to figure out how to get enough supply that's consistent enough. Where, when you started to kind of build that out, where did you really focus on and how did you get to a point where you started to feel comfortable going to those larger companies to start selling this?
One of the key dynamics in wood is that when people are using it, they're usually part of a longer sales cycle. If you're building a new furniture line, it's going to take a lot of time to design and spec it and build it and prototype it before you actually launch it. Same thing is true when you're building a building. There's a long time involved in that. And so what we really recognize is it takes a lot of time on the demand side, and it also takes a lot of time on the supply side. You know, when you're thinking about wood as material, it takes a while for that material to go from wet in log form to a dry finished good. And that depends on the species, depends on the climate. There's a lot of variables there, but the core point is that it takes a while. And so what we recognized is we really wanted to start on the demand side. And we do this thing called stepwise matching, where we identify, hey, here's a core customer segment that we think we can really win in. We identify a few key anchor customers. And because those timelines are pretty long, we focus on then building supply chains to go and meet that. So we're very demand-led in how we think about building out our supply chains.
Yeah, and then actually on the supply and converting raw wood into boards and into cambium carbon wood, did you purchase a sawmill? Did you partner with a sawmill? And how did you build that foundation to start creating your actual product?
So today we have about 220 different manufacturing and sourcing partners, and we work to create supply chains across the country. But when we initially started, I grew up in wood, but I also know that there's lots and lots that I don't know. It's a complicated industry. There's people who know way more than I do. And we were fortunate enough to come across Paul and John, who have run and built a salvage sawmill and fabrication shop outside Baltimore. We built a really deep relationship with them. We ended up integrating and bringing them onto the team. And that really served as our R&D hub. And they've both been able to lead our supply side in an amazing way. So John really leads how we source the material and how we mill it. And Paul really leads how we fabricate it and dry it and bring it to market. And so that type of expertise was critical for us in order to be successful in an industry that is very complicated and, you know, really filled with a lot of systems and legacy processes that you have to know how to navigate. So that's how we started getting into that space.
Yeah. And then on the supply side, were those partnerships net new ideas for cities or places that would get this and salvage this wood? Or were they scattered across suppliers that were already doing it, but just kind of not on a scale that brought it all together?
More the latter. So there's a lot of different people who have seen this as a problem. And when you see the order of magnitude of it, when you go to these log disposal yards and just watch how much material is getting wasted, it's pretty easy to think there's got to be a better way. And so a lot of people have seen that before. We're definitely not the first to connect the dots. But what we are the first to do is bring in scale and bring in some of the core market conditions that can help this go from successful local efforts to very scaled, efficient national efforts. And that's what's happening. So lots of sawmills at the local level already exist, already are processing them. And they're really our partners, you know, so we work with them very intimately. We're very supportive. They're core parts of our supply chain. So we've benefited from that existing effort. And our whole goal is to help them grow and help these local economies grow. Because as you were saying earlier, the more that we can use this waste stream, the more that we can keep live trees and forests, which is the goal. The best trees are trees that are alive and happy. And when they come down, let's use that material so we don't have to go and cut down new trees.
And so you mentioned already 46 million tons of waste in this supply that you have. My first kind of thought around is scale. Do you ever hit a ceiling, or is there just so much wood that's being wasted right now in this type of way that kind of scale is just endless because of all of this waste that exists? And there's so many industries that have endless waste stream. And we had Anion, which is a clothing manufacturer that makes everything from materials that's just like being thrown out from other factories. And is that the case here too with all this discarded wood?
It's the right way to think about it. Obviously, there's a conceptual ceiling at some point. It's there. But the reality is it's endless. There is so, so much of this material and so little of it is being used that there's a gargantuan amount of growth to happen here. And when we're thinking about that, you know, we're talking about billions of board feet that could be produced every year just in the US alone and just from this one wood products waste stream. And so there's lots and lots of room to scale there.
Let's talk a little bit around the customer side. Why would a Patagonia or a Microsoft or an architect go to Cambium and think about using carbon smart wood?
We see people coming to us for a few different reasons. You know, the first is really because we can provide a product that has a much better environmental story that also has a really strong price competitive. You know, we're basically price competitive with any equivalent product in most regions, and we're able to create and provide a more resilient supply chain that is a little bit disconnected from the traditional lumber industry. So when you think about if you're a big furniture manufacturer or you're building lots of new data centers or buildings, you want to make sure that you are going to have some visibility into your pricing and that you're not taking on too much risk within the commodities market. And so we provide that for a lot of these bigger buyers. I think the last thing that we've seen is we're all about storytelling. At the end of the day, I'm a huge believer that if we understand where materials came from, if we can be tied into their stories, we care about them more, we treat them differently. That's what our brand's about. And so when architects, you know, they put carbon smart wood into the walls in a building or the floors or the lobby, it's the thing that they talk about. You know, they say, hey, we just built this new hotel in New York City and all this material came from salvaged trees in New York. It's the story that they tell. And so there's a really strong component of that that we see from folks.
Over 10 years ago, I purchased a townhouse development and it was a new build and the entire thing was all wrapped in cedar. And my first question was like, where did this cedar come from? And it was all first generation old growth cedar, but all of it was selectively harvested and picked that had naturally fallen. And I probably had told that story to every single person that came to the house that was always just like, oh, these are beautiful. And I'd be like, yeah, well, I had a concern because we're wrapped in this beautiful cedar, but it wasn't. It was all, they selectively picked it all out, very methodical about it. And it was a story to tell. And I think that has a lot of meaning, right? And being able to do that has a lot of power. And that's probably why LEED certified buildings too have taken off as well, because, you know, there are a lot of buyers that are, this is really, really important to, and they do want to understand that story. But when you pluck wood off a lumber yard, that story obviously never exists and you have no idea where it came from.
Correct. And people really want to be connected to materials. So like you're saying, in your home, it becomes something that is a conversation starter. It matters to you. And this is true of heirloom furniture. Like, I have a cedar chest that my grandfather made, and that's a thing that I care about. I treat better. I talk about it, because what we all fundamentally want to do as people is we want to connect, and we want to connect to our spaces. We want other people to connect with them as well. And we have so dramatically moved in the direction of making everything the same. We've been like obsessed with high production and sameness instead of actually thinking about, can we be producing materials that we care about? And again, what's really important for us is creating unique and local and high quality materials with the same efficiency and the same price point and a better customer experience than what the industry provides today. So it's about balancing both of those. The stories are really powerful. People care about it. And we want them to have a better customer and business experience.
I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season two sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are three new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. When we think about climate or environmentalism and we think about business, there's often people talk about this price point pain. But you mentioned that the price point is fairly comparable with the added benefit of everything that you're doing. And obviously, what you're doing is a lot more difficult to do than to just buy it from a larger mill. So how do you get it to that price parity? And how important do you think that has been to getting your business off the ground?
We see a really big price sensitivity in this industry. It's pretty much true everywhere. Price matters. And certainly in this space, it matters a ton. And we really focus on providing materials that are at or below cost of the industry. And part of that is because what we believe in is we believe in addressing climate change at scale. We really believe in having transparent data, but we also really, really care about getting to the scale where we can actually create that impact. And a lot about getting to scale is about having people bought in. And a lot of that is very much driven by price. So we focus on that. We're able to compete on price and drive better unit economics because we're dealing with a waste stream, because we're dealing with a disaggregated supply chain. And, you know, we're able to have more resilience and more options when we're thinking about how do we actually build and deliver this material to the market. So it's a big part of how we're driving that today.
How do customers purchase your wood today?
So we're on carbonsmart.com. So pretty easy for folks to remember. And we have our materials listed there today, and we're scaling pretty rapidly. So we're always adding new species and new regions that we're sourcing from. We largely are connecting with customers from other customer referrals. It's kind of our primary growth path right now because we have the brand. And when you get into a building project, you know, there's an architect and a specifier and a designer and a general contractor. And so we'll enter with one of them and we'll leave with the others. So we'll start the project and then somebody will say, oh my God, I want to add you into this other project that I'm doing. It's a perfect fit over here. So we've been really growing very effectively by word of mouth organically within the trade space.
Yeah, one trade or one architect or one building developer kind of starts snowballing from there. And so are you able to have your product across North America or is it centralized to a certain area right now? And where do you see the future over the next few years?
We're primarily based in the US. So we've got about 220 different suppliers across the country. We're sourcing pretty much nationally. Largely that maps to where the trees are in our country. We're starting to scale. Our goal longer term is to really be and bring this solution globally. It's about over a gigaton of emissions every single year come from wasting wood across the globe. It's an unbelievable amount. And this solution applies pretty ubiquitously. So that's something that we're working on scaling to. I'm also a huge believer that you have to build effective, solid businesses first before you start to scale into other regions that have their own complexity. So we're really focused on that. And in terms of our board footage scale, we've diverted about 3.4 million board feet of timber from waste streams in our lifetime. And we want to start growing that, you know, into the tens of millions board feet up into the hundreds of millions of board feet in the next few years. We're starting to scale towards that very rapidly.
And the focus there to be able to achieve that scale, is that through more the same bigger partnerships, more architect firms, more building developers? Is there retail ever in the focus as well? Like what kind of thoughts to get this further into that tens of millions of board feet per year?
It's really about launching with larger and larger partners. So we have a number of those in development, which we'll be excited to share publicly soon. Those look like selling wood into retail. They look like selling wood into mass timber. So starting to build more and more buildings out of this material. And then also really expanding into the outdoor space. So we've done a lot of growth with thermally modified carbon smart wood. So wood that is really stable, non-toxic outdoors. So a lot of time in the decking, siding, fencing space. So those are sort of our three core areas where we're seeing lots of growth and we're putting our energy to expand.
So you built a brand and you also build products within and unique products as well. Really, really beautiful wood and the products look really amazing. You've created a lot of really kind of key partnerships and been able to kind of grow. Supply side seems like a very incredible, difficult thing to pull together, which you've obviously been able to do. And how did you fund all of that? Was that an incredibly costly, you know, endeavor to do? Did you go VC route? Did you go family friends or was it all self-funded? How did you build all that from a funding perspective?
Definitely has taken a good bit of capital to get where we are today. And to get to scale, we are going to continue to bring in different types of capital. I'm a huge believer that it's all about matching the right type of investment into the right type of deployment. And so we focused on having a really blended strategy. So we are very focused on cash flow and generating money and sort of operational expenses from our own sales. We focus also a lot on unlocking public finance. So partnering both on the grant side and then on the public investment side to create some more of this regional infrastructure and unlock and create the enabling conditions to actually source this material at scale. And then we've also raised about $10 million in venture capital, which allows us to build the core technology that connects all of these dots and has helped us get to scale much, much quicker.
You know, you can see very easily that a lot of brand thought and brand building went into Cambium, but what kind of technology had to be built to be able to enable what you're doing in a way that can scale?
We've really focused on building software that can create outsized value when you're at the mill, at the shop, on your yard, and you are managing and moving material. So what that means is hardware integrations to easily track wood as it moves through your stream as a sawmill. It also means data analytics, sort of next generation analytics coming down the pipe with AI integrations. And what that actually looks like is making it easier for folks to know what material they have, to understand and optimize their capacity, and then to sell their own material. And so we do that in lots of different ways at several different steps in the process. But building that has for us been 100% about listening. I grew up in this industry. I think that you often see outsiders sort of come in and say, hey, you should use this. This is like the beautiful solution for you. And they often don't actually listen and focus on the core problems that the people in the industry actually have. And so that's what we really focused on with our technology and have built that to be super functional and very focused on being successful when you're actually using in your day-to-day life.
And without that, it probably wouldn't allow you to kind of grow. Because I'm just thinking, like, in this type of space, you know, with such a focus on building software, that just doesn't seem like competitors would even be thinking about doing that.
That's generally correct. You know, there is a significant number of wood software companies, but they fill a pretty different need than we do, and they don't have the same integrated system. So because we sit at the source side when people are tracking and managing trees, we sit at the processing step where they're actually, you know, turning logs into boards. And then we also sit at the end customer step where we're helping end customers build those supply chains, tell their own customers about it. We're much more integrated than pretty much anybody else on the market.
Ben, this has been incredibly fun to learn about what you're doing. The fact that you've taken a waste stream that's been largely overlooked and created this, we have a lot of incredible wood and there's a business case and we can do this with the same kind of price point is just a really kind of incredible showcase that people really need to be thinking about this kind of circularity and this waste as really being not something that we can throw away anymore and something that we could use so that we don't have to cut down 1,000-year-old trees for this, which is just kind of absurd. So when you talk to entrepreneurs or people that are thinking about joining a company, why now? And would you say that being in the business of doing something that's better for the planet is good business?
Yeah, probably doesn't surprise you to hear me say that. I absolutely do. You know, it's hard and we have a lot of things that are going for us. We're very excited as a company, but I don't want to, you know, undersell that. It is a very difficult business to be in, to have multiple priorities of we want to have just as strong financials as any other company, except we want to be carbon negative on whole. That's pretty much different than every company that has ever existed in history. Pretty much every company historically has on whole made the planet worse from a climate perspective. And our goal is to be one of the first companies that gets to true scale that is actually every single year we make the planet better as a cumulative sort of life cycle analysis. And so as we go towards that, it's hard. It's a very difficult thing, but it's incredibly fulfilling. And I also deeply believe that it's possible. So for anybody who's considering starting the business, for anybody who's considering joining a business, we need you. You should do it. You should take the risk. And most importantly, you should stick with it. And I think that's one of the things that I'm obsessed with is how do we stay focused on something? How do we push through, you know, the inevitable walls that you're going to hit, because you will hit those walls, and get to a place where you can actually start to see scale? Because we have so much more to do as a company. We know it's going to be hard. It's going to be plenty of things that set us back or push back against us along the way. And so I think the most important thing is you should join it for anybody thinking about it. And if you're already in it, get ready for a long ride and make sure you really stick with it.
Yeah, well said. And I think that one thing to kind of point out too is that obviously you're being impactful in terms of turning waste into a product, but then you're also being impactful in how you run your company, which it seems like that's just the obvious for companies that are focused in environmental or sustainability or climate type of businesses. But that is obviously a key thing here too. And with these type of goals to be able to have that, which is adds even more work, but it's the right thing to do. And I am very hopeful and I'm certain that new companies like yourself will see the benefit as a business because people will get behind that. And so how can people learn a little bit more about either yourself or KBM Carbon and check you guys out?
We're easy to find, carbonsmart.com for more about our material and our company. And then you can also learn more about our sort of technology and what we're doing at cambiumcarbon.com. So easy to learn about both there. I'm very active on LinkedIn. So Ben Christensen, CEO of Cambium. If anyone ever wants to reach out or connect, I'm very active there. I respond to messages. So would love to connect in that space too.
All right. Thanks again, Ben.
Thanks, Marco.
Well, Ben, that was a ton of fun to learn about what you're doing, especially doing this with basically waste and turning this into an incredible business opportunity. So I just wanted to ask a little bit about circularity and waste streams. I just think about difficulties. You turned a difficult opportunity into a really, really great business in this 5 years. Why do you think it's so important to work with these type of materials and turn them into a business?
It's a great question. We think about it all the time, and we definitely recognize that when you use a waste stream, you have much less control over your inputs. So it inherently has core challenges baked in there. But one of the things that I think is a unique outcome of that is those challenges often lead you to build better parts of your other business. So we've really had and been pushed to innovate in how we process the material and how we track it and trace it, because it's very important for us to make sure we're super on top of our inventory management and our lead times, because we have a more variable input stream. That same thing is true when we think about, you know, how we've built a brand. And so one of the things I really believe in life is that constraints are often what push us to be creative and to be effective from a business context. And I think that waste streams do that. And the nice thing is they come with challenges. They also come with benefits. You know, a big one for us is we're really able to source material close to where we're processing it, close to where we're selling it, which saves money and saves emissions. So in the same way that there are challenges, there's also real perks, in particular, making it easier for you to access that material, and then also pushes you to build a better and better business.
Thanks so much for tuning into the episode of Someone Like You. We hope you found our discussions today really insightful. Next week, we'll dive into another entrepreneur, founder, building a business in climate. So stay tuned. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. It really, really helps us out. Follow us on LinkedIn, where we also post really great videos from this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.